Welcome once again to our program, Dies Domini, the Day of the Lord, or the Third Commandment, keep holy the Lord's Day, so the Lord's Day can keep us holy, whole, and wholesome. I'm Monsignor Larry Moran, Pastor Emeritus at St. Patrick's Church at 19th and Poplar. My guest, as usual, on our this is the ninth in our series on Keep Holy the Lord's Day, is Ron Eldred, who's professor of religion and world history at John Paul II Catholic High, which is also on the campus of St. Patrick at 19th and Poplar. Welcome once again, Ron. And we've been talking specifically about Pope John Paul II's wonderful letter, Dies Domini, the Day of the Lord, in which he discussed the history and the roots and the Old Testament references to the Lord's Day, starting with Moses, the Ten Commandments back on Mount Sinai, and then coming into the present New Testament, talking about the whole fundamental building blocks of what the church believes about the whole Sunday, the Holy Day, and particularly by going to Holy Mass. And I think we spent a great deal of time before talking about that there was a great fall off in attendance at Mass around from Catholics after Vatican Council II, not only in the United States, but across many Catholic countries of the world. And then a seemingly pretty statistically identified loss of belief in the real presence of Christ. So you were just in our last session getting us the building blocks of John Paul II on why he was saying we have to recover and renew our sense of keeping holy the Lord's Day. So I think there was a couple other things you wanted to say.
Well, we had gotten to the third chapter, which the Pope entitles Dies Ecclesia, the Day of the Church. And what he's doing in there is describing the Eucharistic assembly itself. And we looked at the risen Lord is present in the Eucharistic assembly. The next section, the Eucharistic assembly is a community of believers. The next one, the Eucharistic assembly is a pilgrim people. The Mass renews the covenant. The Lord's Day is the liturgy of the Word and the liturgy of the Eucharist. Those are the most important ones, of course, and we've spent a little more time discussing those. And then at the end of the Mass is a mission. In other words, where do we get the word Mass? It comes from the Latin Missa, and that means mission. And we quoted the Pope there a little bit. I have one more quote I'd like to give there on that. What John Paul has to say about this being sent forth is, I think, well worth quoting. Quote, receiving the bread of life, the disciples of Christ ready themselves to undertake with the strength of the risen Lord and his Spirit the task which await them in their ordinary life. For the faithful who have understood the meaning of what has what they have done, the Eucharistic celebration does not stop at the church door. I think that's what's very important.
Sure.
The church, what we did in the Mass does not stop at the church door. Like the first witnesses of the resurrection, Christians who gather each Sunday to experience and proclaim the presence of the risen Lord are called to evangelize and bear witness to their daily lives, end of quote. So, in other words, the idea of Mass itself, a mission, which essentially means mission, is that the graces that we have acquired, what we've learned, the graces that we have acquired in the Mass, we should carry this out into the world to evangelize the world, to spread the gospel. That's what evangelize means. It comes from evangelium, which means gospel. And to spread the gospel, to do good works, and things like that.
You know, there's a little old funny phrase they used to have. Said, Mr. Big went to church. He never missed a Sunday. Mr. Big went to hell for what he did on Monday. And I think that's what the Pope is trying to say, that we've got to take our faith and become light of the world in the darkness and live our faith. Otherwise, it's just a ritual or a formula that we kind of go through. Okay. Well, we've talked, and this is a little bit a difficult thing to talk about, but I think we have to talk about it because the Pope talks about it, about the obligation that we have as creatures to our Creator, as disciples and followers of Jesus, who is the way and the truth and the life, and who told us we're going to be perfect, to keep the commandments, to the rich young man. So let's talk a little bit about what the Holy Father says about why we need to be a whole person to keep holy the Lord's Day.
Well, the Pope says, quote, "Since the Eucharist is the very heart of Sunday, it is clear why from the earliest centuries the pastors of the Church have not ceased to remind the faithful of the need to take part in the liturgical assembly. In the early days, the Church didn't need to have requirements for mass attendance. But the Pope goes on to point out that it was only later, when the fervor of the faithful began to die down, that the Church found it necessary to resort to specific canonical precepts requiring attendance, some of which, of course, we looked at two or three sessions ago, in canon law or in a precept of the Church or, of course, what the Bible says, of course, originally.
You know, the Catechism, along this line, the Catechism we use at, we're using at RCIA, says, why should we as Catholics attend a Holy Mass on Saturday night or Sunday? And the answer was, well, in gratitude and thanksgiving and to return the love that God has given to us. But then it goes on to say, but if we can't do it and get ourselves out of bed for those high motives, then we should go to Mass because it's our obligation as creatures before our Creator to do so. And, you know, I always said, sometimes we can't operate from the highest motives. We have to operate from other motives that, okay, I'm committing, I don't want to miss Mass because I'm committing a big sin if I do. Now, that's not the most perfect motive, but it's not a bad motive. It's like, why should I be honest? Well, because it makes the world a better place to live and the like. Well, no, I'm going to be honest because otherwise I'll go to jail. Well, that's okay. Fine. As long as you're not going to steal from me, I'm happy whatever your motive is. So we can have perfect motives, spiritual motives, and we can have lesser and imperfect motives. But I think the important thing is that we don't steal and we do get to Mass on Sunday.
Well, the Pope tells us this, that the kind of society that we live in, that we need Mass. We need the graces that we get from it. In fact, let me quote here on that issue. He says, quote, he tells us that the Church members, quote, live in surroundings which are sometimes decidedly hostile, and at times, more frequently, in fact, indifferent and unresponsible to the gospel message. If believers are not to be overwhelmed, they must be able to count on the support of the Christian community. You know, that was one of his important descriptions of the Catholic community, of the assembly, Eucharistic assembly, is the community. Mm-hmm. He goes on to say, this is why they must be convinced. They must be convinced that it is crucially important for the life of faith that they should come together with others on Sundays to celebrate the Passover of the Lord in the sacrament of the New Covenant, end of quote.
I remember a guy when I was a seminarian, I was giving instructions to at a nursing home. And I said to him, Michael, why do you want to become a Catholic? And he said, well, I used to live next to a Catholic family. They had a big family, six or seven kids. Every Sunday, snow, rain, hail, they'd pile those kids into the station wagon. And go down to the Catholic Church. And I said to myself, gee, there must be something really important there for that family to do that every Sunday. So here was a guy that was wanted to come into the Catholic Church because of the good example that he'd seen from other people who probably didn't know they had any influence on his life at all many, many years ago. But that whole idea of giving good example to others and strengthening one another can be another encouragement for us to keep holy the Lord's Day. What about else? What else does the Holy Father say about this?
Well, the Pope gives us some ideas, some thoughts about what we can do during the rest of the day to make it holy and keep it holy. Not, in other words, going to Mass is first and foremost, but the rest of the day we need to do some special things as well.
Okay.
And
the spirit of the Sabbath, or the spirit of Sunday, spirit of the Lord's Day.
Well, he tells us the heart of Sunday, of course, is the Mass, but we have a duty to mark the rest of the day by grateful and active remembrance of God's saving work, he tells us. About this, he says, quote, "This commits each of Christ's disciples to shape the other moments of the day. Those outside the liturgical context, family life, social relationships, moments of relaxation, in such a way that the peace and joy of the risen Lord will emerge in the ordinary events of life." To fill the rest of the day, John Paul suggests that families spend time in a more intense experience of faith, such as family prayer or visits to nearby shrines or
Just visiting together. Family needs time to be together to grow and learn to love one another.
He goes on into another section here where he talks about Sunday as a day of solidarity.
Big word.
Yes,
what does that mean?
Solidarity. Well, it was a big word that John Paul used the word solidarity a lot. Of course, you might recall that there was a labor organization in Poland named Solidarity, Walesa, who was ahead of that and was very much inspired by John Paul, and probably was the sort of the that which really triggered the whole collapse of the communist empire.
Kind of started
everything rolling
with solidarity,
with the idea of solidarity. And by solidarity, the Pope means the performance of works of mercy. This is what he's really talking about when he's talking about solidarity. About this matter, he says, quote, "The Eucharist is an event and program of true brotherhood. From the Sunday Mass, there flows a tide of charity, destined to spread into the whole life of the faithful, beginning by inspiring the very way in which they live the rest of Sunday. If Sunday is a day of joy, Christians should declare by their actual behavior that we cannot be happy on our own. They look around to find people who may need their help." So here he's giving us some more practical advice.
Being solid in our concern about others.
Yes, our neighbor, in other words. It may be that in their neighborhood or among those they know, there are sick people, elderly people, children or immigrants, who precisely on Sundays feel more keenly their isolation, needs, and suffering. It is true that the commitment to these people cannot be restricted to occasional Sunday gestures. In other words, he's saying it doesn't stop at Mass, it doesn't stop at Sunday. The rest of the week we're supposed to continue with these acts.
But hopefully we'd have a little maybe extra time to visit a sick person.
Yes.
Okay.
On Sunday. But presuming a wider sense of commitment, why not make the Lord's Day, now this is the Pope talking again, a more intense time of sharing, encouraging all the inventiveness of which Christian charity is capable, inviting to a meal people who are alone, visiting the sick, providing food for needy families, spending a few hours in voluntary work and acts of solidarity. Again, you could almost think of the word solidarity, brotherhood is another word for brotherhood or sisterhood. These would certainly be ways of bringing into people's lives the love of Christ received at the Eucharistic table. Again, this is the Pope saying this. Lived in this way, not only the Sunday Eucharist, but the whole of Sunday becomes a great school of charity, justice, and peace, end of quote. I could paraphrase these things or put them in my own words, but I think the words of the Pope are appropriate, and so I think it's appropriate to quote them.
I think the Holy Father Pope John Paul II, whom I like to call the great, had a real sense of what people's lives are about. He was an actor himself, grew up in Poland, went to the seminary clandestinely during the communist regime, was a bishop who had great opposition, and was very close to the people, had been a worker among the under the Nazi regime in a not a coal mine, but a some kind of a blasting mine or rock mine.
Quarry.
A quarry.
Yeah. I remember we had a series where we discussed those things. Right. Now it's coming back to me.
Sure.
Almost forgotten about
but
that.
But he seemed to have a sense of how the ordinary person lives their lives. And that's one of the reasons I resonate with Pope John Paul II so much, because he talks about ordinary things that we can do as ordinary people in our lives.
Well, I think that's why people related to him so well. He was far above the ordinary, but he appeared ordinary. One of the people.
Yeah.
And you can see a lot, that was his style too. And you can see now that Pope Benedict has a much, much different style. He understands people, and he's a little more distant. He's a little more reserved. He's a little more
formal,
ritualistic, formal. Even the way he dresses, I could never see Pope John Paul II wearing a pair of red velvet shoes or something like that Cardinal Ratzinger was wearing not long ago, or put on the different kinds of hats, or he had some kind of a beautiful velvet with ermine collar on it that he had taken out of some of the papal closets, and go way back to the Renaissance period. And John Paul just has a totally different style. And
on the other hand, I think their thought pattern is very,
very similar.
Very similar. And this new encyclical on charity, which I just had the chance to read, thanks to Michael Morose, who gave me a copy, has some profound thoughts in there. I think he broke new ground on the idea of eros, sexual love, and agape, beneficent or other-centered love. So obviously they're going to be two different people, but I think their thought patterns are going to continue to inspire us.
Yeah, they were inspired by a similar, almost the same philosophers and theologians.
Is that
so
right?
At some point, hopefully we'll be able to develop something along that line. I know we had talked about having something on the thought of John Paul, and I had started doing some preparation on
theology of the body.
That and other things, his personalism and where he got his ideas. And but you're right, Benedict's basically was schooled in the same philosophy and the same theology as was John Paul.
Okay, well, I don't think we've said anything yet about another important part of Sunday being a day of renewal, spiritual, physical, mental, even a day to get some sleep. Recently, to begin this section, a young woman told me, she said, I read the catechism because my good friend was saying, hey, you're not supposed to be doing all this work on Sunday that you're doing. And she said, well, why not? And he said, well, because it's supposed to be a different kind of a day. It's supposed to be a day of rest and renewal and enjoyment. And she said, well, let's look up the catechism. So they looked up and she said, oh, my heaven. And I can't tell you, she said, how it freed me that I didn't have to be working all the time. I'm always behind in my work. Well, I don't know anybody who isn't, but it gave me the freedom to read a good book or to take some relaxation and to get off the fast lane. So I think what we're talking about today is another way when Jesus said the Sabbath or the Lord's Day is made for man, not man for the Sabbath. That it's for our benefit that God gave us this day.
Yeah, it tells us that God rested on the seventh day, Genesis, but really, as you said, God doesn't need to rest. It was really for man's the need that man and woman would have to rest. And John Paul, this section, he calls Sunday is the day of rest or a day of rest. And we'll conclude this discussion of John Paul and his apostolic letter by looking at what he has to say about the day of rest. Here I have a quote I'd like to share with you. It's a quote, the alternation between work and rest built into human nature is will by God himself, as appears in the creation story in the book of Genesis, and I might add also Exodus. Rest is something sacred. So that's important.
You're still quoting the Pope.
Yes, still quoting the Pope. Rest is something sacred because it is man's way of withdrawing from the sometimes excessively demanding cycle of earthly tasks in order to renew his awareness that everything is the work of God. There is a risk that the prodigious power over creation which God gives to man can lead him to forget that God is the Creator upon whom everything depends. It is all the more urgent to recognize this dependence in our own time, when science and technology have so incredibly increased the power which man exercises through his work. Through Sunday rest, daily concerns and tasks can find their proper perspective. The material things which we worry give away to spiritual values in a moment of encounter and less pressured exchange. We see the true face of the people with whom we live, end of quote.
That's a powerful, powerful quote. I'm glad that you included that in. And I just like to focus on a couple of things you read. You commented on the Pope's words there. It's alternation between work and rest is built into human nature. And if we defy that at our own destruction. I know people, I know a young man who said, I'm going to make $1 million before I'm 30. It was probably now it'd be a lot more than that. But he worked all the time, and he worked hard, and he built a business, and eventually he got into overeating. He got maybe 150 pounds overweight, and gradually he just kind of fell apart. Because there wasn't any time to relax. You know, the guy said to the person, the old saying was, if you're an archer and you don't relax the bow, it will lose its spring, it will lose its force, it will lose its ability. You can't keep a bow strung all the time. And that's what I think easily we North Americans try to do, including myself, that we work is the only important thing, and obviously we end up where we can't work.
There's an old saying, you know, that and there's reason for it, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy.
Right.
And we have the word recreation, and we think of recreation as, you know, having fun and doing all playing games and maybe hobbies and lots of other things, which that's true. But what that really means is it means to recreate.
That's a great insight.
It means to recreate ourselves. And work sometimes after a while begins to wear us down, no matter how important the work is and what have you. And so we have to do sometimes something different, avocationally, you know, maybe a hobby or maybe a sport or reading or something to recreate ourselves and
get outside and walk in nature.
Sure.
In a state park.
Well, the Pope goes on. In fact, I want to quote here. I want to give you a little quote where the Pope goes into something just like that. Let me find it here. He says, the Pope goes on to say that the beauties of nature can be rediscovered and enjoyed in full on the Lord's Day. In this regard, he says, quote, as the day on which man is at peace with God, with himself and with others, Sunday becomes a moment when people can look anew upon the wonders of nature, allowing themselves to be caught up in the marvelous and mysterious harmony, which in the words of St. Ambrose, weds the many elements of the cosmos in a bond of communion and peace by an inviolable law of concord and love. Men and women then come to a deeper sense, as the Apostle says, everything created by God is good and nothing to be rejected if it is received with thanksgiving. For then it is consecrated by the word of God in prayer. End of quote. He's quoting St. Paul there in 1 Timothy 4:5.
I think it's, again, a beautiful insight into the basic needs we have as human beings. I remember seeing a beautiful poster, and it was of these tall trees, like something in those redwood trees out in California. And the legend at the bottom said, I have grown taller today because I have walked among the trees. Well, I think he was talking about, I'm spiritually taller, I'm mentally and emotionally taller because I've had a change of pace. So I liked your word, especially, Ron, about recreation. Meaning to recreate, rebuild again. Sleep recreates us. Shakespeare says, sleep knits up the raveled sleeve of care, sore balm of nature's second course. And I can't remember the whole quotation from Macbeth, but he speaks beautifully about the healing force and recreating force of sleep itself. And we're talking about rest and the ways that we can renew ourselves spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and physically.
The Pope doesn't go into issues that involve what you can't and can't do, you know, in terms of work. And it perhaps is it would probably be a little bit beyond the scope for us to right. go into that. But there are some things there that...
Well, I think that what he does say is that there's got to be time not just for work, mm-hmm. but there's got to be time for renewal, whatever renews a person. I know some people who garden, and they really renew themselves by gardening.
Well, that brings up, when I teach the kids about the Ten Commandments, and we were looking at Keep Holy the Sabbath Day, the kids will have a whole bunch of questions that, well, what can we do? Can I do this? Can I do that? My dad does this. I have to be careful when they start talking about what their dad does on Sunday and their mom sure. does. And I have to be careful. Sometimes I can usually give them an answer. But other times I say, well, you or your parents or your friends should consult your priest about that particular issue. They gave the example that you did. That's one they might give. Well, that's the only day I got. Well, it may be that's the only day some people have. Mm-hmm. Or I enjoy gardening. You know, maybe work, but physical work, but I enjoy doing that.
And they may be behind a desk all day.
Sure.
And just to get out and get their hands in the dirt is a good thing. Okay, we're coming towards the end of our program once again. Thank you for the beautiful quotes from Dies Domini, the Holy Father. So we'll continue. Keep holy the Lord's Day, and the Lord's Day can keep us whole, holy, and wholesome. May God bless you always and in always.